Hello and welcome to Colors of the Dark podcast. I'm your co-host Rebecca McKendry. What? I was holding for the plane. Do you not
Oh,
hear
I
the
didn't hear the
plane?
plane, but that's,
I was holding for the
I forgot
plane.
you're in
It's
Burbank.
okay. We're in now. Yeah, it's takeoff pattern at night. So, for those listening at home, which is everybody, I live next to an airport or very close to one. So, we have morning takeoff pattern and then we have evening takeoff pattern. So, yeah. And I was holding for plane. But anyways, we are in and we are the Colors of the Dark podcast. I'm your co-host, Rebecca McKendry. And with me is Elric Kane. How you doing?
I'm excited. It's the last episode, the final episode ever.
Before we take a break
Oh, I
for
thought
a
it was ever.
summer,
I'm just wait. I
guess
just
what?
know if we
We're
said
back
it was
in.
final, I think how great an episode we'd do. We would be like so, all the energies would be flowing. Maybe we just need to pretend that occasionally.
No, we'll be back in 4 weeks, so
4
we are
weeks. That's too
taking,
soon. No, it's gonna be like
no,
six.
it's is it?
I'm deciding now in the moment. Maybe
Okay, well,
six
we're
weeks.
taking a brief summer break after this episode where I will be driving all the fucking way across the country in my camper. And I'm actually really excited because I'm doing some like spooky stops along the way. So I'm stopping Roswell, New
Oh yeah,
Mexico
that's
in
fun,
2 days. And then I'm doing an escape room in Dallas, Fort Worth, that I've been wanting to do. And so I've got a couple other spooky stops along the way. I'm doing a haunted house in Pigeon Forge. And then on the way back, I'm going to the Mothman Museum. And my son has insisted that we stay at the campground next to Skinwalker Ranch. So
I don't know
yay.
what
So
Skinwalker
hope.
Ranch is.
You know, it's a TV show. So you know how like I'm obsessed with that History Channel show about the, guys
Yeah.
digging and throwing a lot of money into the ground to try to find this treasure that doesn't exist. Skinwalker Ranch is that same show, but in Utah, and instead of looking for buried Holy Grail treasure, they're looking for aliens. And so yeah, it's just a lot of guys throwing money at, magnetic imaging, and we're gonna dig this. Actually, they don't do a lot of digging, but yeah, it's still a lot of testing because they think there's something weird happening there with aliens. And yeah, so he's been watching this since he was a wee one, even more wee than he is now. And yeah, so he's obsessed with it. So we're driving by just to see the area, and there's apparently like a nice campsite right next door, so we can see if aliens take me away. I may not be back, y'all, is what I'm saying, because aliens. Aliens,
The
man.
next podcast, you will be in space. That would be pretty
I
cool.
will, or maybe I'll just be like doppelganged. That's kind of fun too. Like we've all seen Monolith. Like I could get my black brick in the mail and then just be replaced. Like there's lots of options here of how this could go down.
What is your version of aliens in reality? Like, if they are real, let's go with the real. Because I think probably like bad taste. I assume they want to use us for fast food chain.
That's kind of, and they're really crass and
Yeah, and
gross and
like
have a lot of body
move weird
humor.
and have like ripped up business suits. I like that.
I assume, so my version of aliens, I'm going to get like all hypothetical here, is I assume that if aliens have enough wherewithal that they could come visit us, knowing that everything's like billions of miles away, light years upon light years, that if they have developed the technology to literally travel that far, I always think that they probably wouldn't be traveling. Like, I don't expect them to show up in a spaceship. I expect it far more to be like wormholes. Like, they have figured out how to collapse space itself. So, much more like quantum physics than, how to make your spaceship go vroom, vroom. And so, I always assume that they would just kind of appear out of a portal. And I always view it as far more like a psychological thing. Like, if they can do that, then they could definitely kind of figure out how to work a human brain a little bit more. So, I always like the movie Dark Skies, the Blumhouse one from a number of years ago. I liked that one because it was far more psychological. Like the aliens were making them forget things and then replacing things. And then they were having time skips and things like that. Like that's kind of how I always view aliens to be. But that said, I like to think that aliens would kind of try to like, leave it as you find it. So not, mess with people, and anything that we would see would be kind of mistakes or ancillary
No
things
way,
that
dude.
happen.
It's all V. It's like total. They're
It's
gonna.
all
It's V.
me.
It's like the whole big mouth and that. And they act all nice at the start, and then they're eating rat. No. Quick. This is Becca's bonkers brain. Where is it at? You ready? Okay. You're gonna just say like completely truthfully. I know you're a skeptic. Aliens? Yes or no? Do they exist? Like,
Yeah,
okay. Okay. So you
100%.
really do think they do? Okay. But do you
So that I
think
don't
we've had
question.
UFOs that we've actually seen, or do you think that's never been aliens?
100%.
Do you think aliens have been on this planet or past this our atmosphere?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm not asking if aliens exist somewhere in the greater galaxy, but okay.
So I definitely believe that aliens exist somewhere in the greater galaxy because it is too huge and we know jack all about it.
That's like asking if there's a god. It's so hard to that's so open. But I just mean, do you believe they've actually so when people are in these survivor meetings, do you think some people have actually had brushes? You think there's been some sort of connection?
I think there is too. So I don't even look to the modern day stuff of I saw it, man, and took my cow up. I don't even look at that type of stuff. What I look at is the mythology. How much mythology is about people in stars landing, and it's in all different cultures. And that's where I'm kind of dude, if people thousands of years ago were writing about people in stars landing from space, then for some reason, that's when it becomes real to me, because that shows that this has been going on for a stretch. So yeah, that is, I don't believe in ghosts.
Well, that's why, this is it's a three question prompt. So number two is ghosts or any kind of spirits like that, afterlife on like that you could seriously, you're a firm no there.
Okay. I want to believe. That's kind of it. I love the idea of there being some type of greater afterlife, but that said, most of my being believes we are all stardust.
Actually,
let
me rephrase, because I think that's asking, is there aliens in the galaxy? Afterlife, I think only, in my opinion, only stupid people ever comment on that, because you can't know either way. No one knows.
What does it matter?
That's why the term faith is a great term, because you would have to have faith in saying that's unprovable to believe. So I'm all for that. I'm saying more ghosts in the sense of, when people have had a spooky encounter on this plane, do you believe that kind of afterlife exists on Earth, where people
not as much?
So yeah, because that's
again gross. I want to believe. There are people I know and love, even yourself, that have had these creepy shit happen, and I've never had it happen to me, so I find it harder to believe that there is some type of ghostly thing following me around, and it's what keeps opening my kitchen cabinets, and not just gravity or shitty 1940s locking mechanisms. I find it hard not to immediately jump to kind of the most logical thing. But that said, I know enough people that have had really spooky experiences that makes me say I really want to believe this. So yeah. Now let's play this
number
game.
Three, I haven't done the third. This is what it's all been building towards.
Are you going Bigfoot?
Who cares about Bigfoot? Number three, 100% has to be Loch Ness Monster.
Okay.
Yeah or nay?
Nay.
Okay. Now let me undo all your theories.
I didn't even get to my Loch Ness Monster.
Tell me your thoughts.
So that Loch Ness Monster, if you'd asked me when I was 10, I would have totally been like, fuck yes, it's a plesiosaur. Yeah. And I really wanted to be a plesiosaur. That said, at this point, I feel like there is so much research that has been done there. I was pretty avid following the take the lock thing that they did a couple of years ago, where they had everybody watching footage and stuff like that. I feel like if there was something there, that somebody would have seen it more recently. And the fact that a lot of the pictures have now been proven as fake makes me go, as much as I want it to be there. That said, I do actually think people are seeing stuff because I lived on the water for a really long time near the Shenandoah River. And we had fucking 4-foot long mud cats that you would occasionally see leap out of the water. And you would be like, oh my God, a Volkswagen just jumped out of the lake. And so, yeah, I totally think that people are actually seeing things from a distance and kind of, having those moments of what the fuck did I just see? Are they actually seeing a plesiosaur? I wish it was true. So yeah. Half of our listeners are big Loch Ness Monster fans, Elric, and they just turned this off. My truth.
I'll do it in reverse.
Okay. Do your Loch Ness Monster in reverse.
In terms of the three things, Loch Ness, the reason I believe is because my mom lived in Scotland for a long time. And when she was one day, she doesn't believe in any of this stuff, even though she's the reason I believe in two of these. She was standing there and she saw a long shadow. And she told me that when I was real young, she goes, I did see a long shadow once, but I doubt it was. And I was like, nope, Loch Ness Monster's real. That's my science. So I'm in. I'm all in on Loch Ness.
Not a tree. I'm all in on a guy with an umbrella. It's Loch Ness.
She saw a shadow. She saw a shadow on the nest. Come on. No, I actually believe they have Klingon cloaking device, so I believe in it. Loch Ness is just...
Wait, so Nessie has teleporting abilities? No,
Klingon technologies, which is cloaking, which means it can't be seen under radar.
No, so Nessie can cloak is what you're saying.
Yeah, I assume so. That's why
you can't
see it.
So it's a prehistoric dinosaur still alive today that has Klingon cloaking devices.
Right, prehistoric, but it comes from the future to the past. It's complicated, and it kind of goes back to number one. You know, you have to pay attention. Okay, number two, do I ghost? I think, again, because of my mom's story, I kind of believe a little bit. I definitely think that there's some sort of residue left in certain situations, like violent. Mm-hmm. I think there's something psychically happening on this plane. I don't know if it's ghosts or not.
So you did touch on something that I feel might be true, which is the idea that we do leave behind a residue. Yeah. That because like I said, I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like we're all stardust. At the same time, everything around us is stardust. So the idea that you can still be feeling residue or particles from somebody, I think is completely true.
I will say bad juju, like bad vibes are a really interesting thing, because if you've ever been in a place where you were like, wow, there's a feeling here, and I've only had it about two or three times, each time it's been in a place that I would then find out is meant to be super. One was in New Orleans, one was in Savannah for sure, where there's all these like stories because of death. And I remember my parents went into a house once where they were like, this is this oppressive like place, what is wrong with it? And they asked and found out the previous person had committed suicide. And so I do think there's some sort of negative energy that does seep into things. But whether that's ghosts, it's really hard to know. So I don't know.
I agree with that to an extent, but I don't think it's just people dying places, because like, and I never really talked about this on the show. So I live in a convalescence home, y'all. Like my house was like
the one right now. That's a convalescent.
Yeah, oh, weird. That's why it's got ramps in it. Yeah. So the house that I live in Burbank, I can't believe you've never even asked me this. It's ramps throughout the whole thing. I do not have a single staircase.
I thought that was for dollies, because I assumed it's a filmmaking house. It's Burbank. You get some nice smooth tracks in there, you know, like why would I think it's a bunch of old, it didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah. Back, late 80s through late 90s, this house was used as a 4-person convalescent home, which is also why it's subdivided so much, why it feels kind of hodgepodge. It's a 4-bedroom, but like everything's separate, and each one of the bedrooms has its own bathroom, and they're all kind of around this centralized area. That's why. And then the room off the back was used as medication and medical equipment storage. So yeah. And this was a convalescence home. So people died in here. And so, but at the same time, I've never had that feeling. I've always just been like, yeah, I've got a weird looking home. I've got, I've fallen and I can't get up alarms in every single room. It looks like the Ghostbusters, like at any moment I could smack a button and the whole house would go off. So yeah, someday I'll go through and take all those out, but I think they're kind of badass.
But you don't feel there was no present energy. You didn't think there.
No, not in this place. In my last house, I felt that. The one in North Hollywood, it was always kind of like, I don't know, there was something weird there. I found those goat bones in the backyard, and that was like enough for me. And I think that was just like somebody's quinceanera. I don't think it was like, you know, human sacrifice, but that was always like, I found a lot of bones in the backyard.
Interesting. And then finally, aliens. Hell no.
Aliens.
Hell no. What am I, crazy? No.
What the fuck?
I do think there could be something that I've always believed, like since I was like really young, I've always believed if we've ever had these encounters, I've always believed it was us in the future traveling back, trying to leave no trace, trying to be all careful, but then screwing up by, you know, through a meeting. Cause that I can believe that more than I can believe. I think we would have, there's been a couple presidents, like maybe 3 or 4 in a row that I am 100% sure. If there was a memo about a real alien thing, that we would have heard about it. Like they are so useless. Like, I feel like...
like, Trump is incapable of keeping a secret. Like, he just would have been like, and the aliens told me, fuck!
He's not the only one. There's been a few recently. Like, I feel like since Clinton, I don't believe that these are people who would be able to hold the secret that there's aliens. I think they would just be way too excited to tell the world. And so that's when I actually stopped. Up until then, I think I was like, oh, there's going to be some bigger... And then it's like, yeah, we would know if there was. So I don't think so.
You know... And that theory that you just put out, I've read in some type of heady astrophysical book. And I actually think it may have even been Hawking, because I've read a couple of those. But there was something about that, like, there will reach a point where we are trying to go back in time to deplete resources from our old selves.
Well, that's what depleting. But another way to think about it, like, you could imagine the way we go to zoos, the way we study history, that if you had the ability in the future and you didn't want to undo reality, you could imagine that is a big draw to look at life through that lens and be able to study humanity in real time is pretty fascinating, you know?
I'm 90% sure I even have Man, I was just reading one of those a couple nights ago. I'm looking around because I thought I had the book behind me, but I was reading something that had theories like that a couple nights ago that was all about like our future selves coming back to visit our current selves, and that's actually what we've been seeing.
Yeah.
But that's a cool theory.
I love that that wasn't the first 20 minutes of the show was not the planned part of the episode, which is great.
I
We
know,
just
hey,
make you on
all
some
right.
weird theory.
How long's the episode
It's
gonna be
gonna be
this week?
47 minutes. We had to do this one a week earlier than normal, so we have less new viewings. So it's that was a nice little
Okay, no, but the big
Okay.
thing, the big appeal of my cross country trip, in addition to a number of other things I'm doing, I'm going to the Mothman Museum. Okay,
Mothman.
Mothman.
I've only seen the movie once. I liked it. My favorite part was where the phone rings. He picks up and it's like Mothman here, and I was just like, "What?" He's like getting crank called by Mothman. That's pretty funny to me. But yeah, I want to believe in. I do like local legends the most.
Yeah.
Like I think they're the ones that are most exciting, and like you kind of want to believe on a micro level. Like I would truly want to believe
So
Bigfoot and all that. I really want those things to exist. But there are some
we
weird
have,
bugs and creatures in this world, and in the sea especially, that it does
you
make
know,
you go, there's got to be some aberration. The point is, the world is a fascinating place,
world is a
and there's
fascinating
much we do
place.
not understand, especially about our own brains.
Yes.
Speaking of which, aren't you hosting a screening sometime soon?
I am. So I am hosting a screening of 976 Evil
Evil.
at the Winchester, Virginia Alamo. And this is happening on June 18th, which is a Tuesday. You'll probably see me hanging out at the Winchester Alamo quite a bit. They have this wonderful screening series out there, created by a friend of mine, Faye, who and they do weirdo movies like 976 Evil, like hard to find horror films, things that you don't normally see in theaters, but then they also do major runs. So like I'm seeing Watchers there, the new
Oh,
M. Night
I thought you meant
Shyamalan.
the old Watcher.
Like,
Okay. Still
no.
fun. Still
No, but
exciting, but yeah.
it's still exciting. So they do like new run horror films, but then they also, as part of the screening series, do things like Leviathan is screening there in a couple of weeks, and I'm hosting the 976 Evil
Wait, wait,
one.
wait.
So
You're going to be there while Leviathan, but you're hosting 976 Evil. What?
I'm actually not. Otherwise, I
Oh, okay.
would. Leviathan is playing like the first night I'm in town, and that was cutting it a bit close. But 976 Evil. Yeah.
Robert
So
Englund, auteur.
Robert Englund.
Love it.
So yeah.
I am
So I'll
all
be there for that.
okay. While you're there, maybe the same time, I am very lucky to be part of American Cinematheque's greatest achievement, their Bleak Week, Cinema of Despair, where they
This
put.
is so goddamn you.
I went last year to one. They are all so bleak and dark, and I love all these movies. Shout out to Josh Ethier, who's a big, he gets really involved in this too, our editor friend. But this year I had tweeted because I saw they were playing 29 Palms, which I haven't seen in 20 years since I saw it like on its first at a festival in New Zealand. And it's to this day the screening that most probably haunts me. And it was like the most silent a room has ever been in my cinema going experience. And it really left a big impression on me, and even the film too that I just made. So then somebody wrote to me and said, "Hey, do you want to be the person for who intros?" And I had to write a thing for their booklet, which is really fun. They do a really cool booklet about all the films. So that is going to be if you want to see this, and it is a really mesmerizing movie. It won't be for everyone.
It's fucked
Yeah, it
up.
has a
It's fucked
very, very dark
up.
ending. This is Wednesday, June 5th. I think if you live anywhere in the world, this is worth flying here to go to the screening,
To see
and then
Palm
cry, and
Springs.
then you can cry. This is in
Oh,
29 Palms,
or
so
29 Palms.
yeah.
Sorry, 29 Palms.
But
You should go, you should watch 29 Palms and then go see Palm Springs, just so that you can see what inspired this incredibly bleak
yes,
movie.
and but I did get to shoot a little bit in 29 Palms. It's inspired. I'll tell that close to the time, but it gets pretty hot there, and there's not a lot to do. Anyway, the movie's really cool, and there's so many good movies on their Bleak Week. It's crazy because it's literally 1 week, but they fit in enough programming for that to have been like 2 months in 1 week. It's like insane if you look through all the titles. Some really cool shit. So, very cool to be part of that. Well, let's get into a few, we only
Yeah.
watched a couple new movies, and then we're gonna do a fun list of things for you all to watch while we're off air. What did you
Yeah.
see new?
So I only watched one new thing, but then I did two kind of retro screenings of films that I'd never seen before. So I will first say, this is just kind of a quick note. Do you remember when we were in Chattanooga for, or no, it was when we were in Knoxville for Knoxville Horror Film Festival. This would have been last October.
The one with Brian?
And you Yeah, you and Brian were like out late drinking and partying and, you know, having a great time. And I was like, I'm tired. I'm going back to the hotel room. And I caught a cab back to the hotel room and I get, or it was an Uber, and I get into the Uber and the guy's like, hey, what you in town for? And I was like, film
Oh,
festival.
I
And
know
he
where you're
goes,
going.
I'm in a Lance Oppenheimer film. And I'm like, really? I've seen a couple of his documentaries. What Lance Oppenheimer film are you in? And he says, Sperm World. I sell my sperm on the internet. And this is my Uber driver. And I'm like, fascinating. Do go on. So we literally have a conversation while he drives me back to my hotel about how he sells his sperm on the internet. Now, this sounds incredibly creepy as I'm describing it, but I was absolutely fascinated by this because it is just, he gives it away. Like he's in Facebook groups where people are trying to get pregnant and he will drive it to you. And like, it was wild. So I watched his documentary, Sperm World, the name of the Lance Oppenheimer documentary about people who sell their sperm online, is now on FX. And so please, it was a wild journey. It was wild.
Is it cre Are they haunted sperm? Are they serial?
No, this is not a horror thing. I just had to
I
tell
got No, I
you
like the
because
tie-in.
that was a crazy story of me late night at 2 a.m. while you guys decide to go drinking, and I hung out with guy who sells sperm on
I
internet.
remember when you told us we were like, it didn't sound. Lance Oppenheimer was actually a very big documentarian, but
Yes.
I at the time thought, oh, that doesn't sound like a film that we'll ever hear of again. And then a couple weeks ago, I did see somebody posting and saying it was really good, actually.
It
So
was
fascinating.
really fascinating. Some of the people in it very much sell their sperm, or not even sell, they give their sperm away out of just kind of like, I know how hard it is to get pregnant. I don't want people to have to struggle, and you know, fertility clinics suck, and are very expensive. And then there are other people who were like, I will only do an in-person vaginal donation, and you're like, creepy dude. But yeah, it was
Oh,
a
wait, and do
fascinating
people take them up on
documentary.
that?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Now you have to watch the documentary.
That is the documentary I want to watch. It's just about those people because I want to be like, oh, that's a really weird,
This really showed both. And it started with the people who are wanting to be pregnant and don't have access. Whether they're in, you know, lesbian relationships or just I'm single and I don't want to have to deal with a guy. And yeah, those types of it started with those, but then it transitioned into the people who are providing the donations and kind of their reasons for it. And yeah, so and it some of it was really creepy and some of it was like
Interesting, yeah.
that guy just wants to make the world a less complicated, more beautiful place. So it was fascinating. So I just had to quickly say that because I was in an Uber with that guy. Okay, so digging into new things that I watch. This one, you know what? I'm not going to start with that one. I'm going to start with not a new one, but it was a first time watch for me. The Boogans.
The Boogans, yeah, I've seen it one time, a long time ago.
I have never seen The Boogans, and so
It didn't have
if
a
you
release
like,
for a long time. That was a hard to
I know.
find film for a long
I
time.
remember the VHS cover, which is very distinctively like creepy skeleton hands around a cabin. I remember this. I'd never watched it on VHS, and then it was like really hard to find. But if Kino Loyber feels like it needs to be on 4K Ultra HD, then God damn it, I'm gonna watch this shit. And I did. This was really fun. You know, when I got this, Jared Rivet tweeted at me and he was like, that's one of my favorite films. And
Oh,
I was
interesting.
like, really? And then going in, I was like, yeah, it is fun. So it is two guys who you kind of get the idea, like they're just college grads. Like they keep making jokes about like, I went to college for this. They have been hired on as temporary labor at an abandoned silver mine in Colorado. And they're basically building out this mine that's been abandoned for like 100 years. Like it's was abandoned in like the 19 teens, and they're now digging it out in the 1980s. And so they're down there doing all this dangerous work, but the mine was closed because people started going missing. The miners started going missing back in the 19 teens. And so that's what led them to close the mine down in the first place. And now these guys are down there like exploring it and digging it back out. While this is happening, they open up a couple of rooms that had been closed up because of cave-ins. And then all of a sudden, people in the town start going missing. And what's really fun is that you get immediately that there is some type of creature that has been unleashed from this mind, but the whole thing is shot like a slasher. And so it feels like a slasher, and it has all the trappings of a slasher, and it's kids in the woods because these two guys who have been hired to do this temporary work, their girlfriends come out with them. And so now it's four kids having, you know, fun in a house all weekend. And so it has this very much a setup of a slasher, but the whole time you're going, did I just see a tail? And so you understand it's going to turn into a creature feature. This was fun. The characters were trite. Don't overthink it. Like, one dude is constantly horny. The other one wants a real relationship. You know, it was, you know, they're caricatures.
That's life. That's just being
that's
young.
Life. That's
being
it's young. Life. Like, yeah, it's just constant. It's literally every line he said in the first half of the movie until his friend started dying was in some way related to boobs or having sex.
He showed growth by the end.
He did, because as soon as the creature showed up, he was like, oh shit, I gotta, this is now my primary brain function. So yeah, slasher, but monsters. And this was just fun. The question I always ask myself is, did it need to be in 4K? And you know what? With this one, I'm going to say hell yes. Because when the creatures show up at the end, they're good. They're fun. They're not the best effects I've seen this week. I'll get to that one in a sec. But God damn it, if you're going to have like little reptilian creatures that burst out of a cave, I like that they are in 4K. And yes, I just revealed that they are reptilian. Ooh, that's kind of a spoiler. But guess what? It's almost 40 years old. I think we're past that point. So the boogans, go in for the slasher, stick around for the weird little reptilian creatures.
When we went to see the Sloth movie, which I can't remember. Is there
Slaughterhouse.
I just forgot the title of a film called Slaughterhouse, which is amazing. When we saw that in the theaters, the trailer before, one of the trailers was for a killer mannequin movie called Don't Look Away.
And I remember that.
I never saw it at the time, but I was curious because it, you know, it was an interesting looking trailer, and it has finally landed on Shudder. So it's not on Shudder, on Tubi. So it's on Tubi, and I was curious. It definitely has a bit of an It Follows aesthetic vibe a bit to it. It doesn't quite come close to that, but it's interesting. So it has a really good opening. Like in the first 5 minutes, I was like, ooh, okay. So a truck is transporting something. The guy gets stopped by some cars who are going to rob him. And they open the back, and it's, imagine this massive, massive, massive truck and nothing in it except one kind of coffin-like crate. Not quite a coffin, but one crate. Just one. And they're like, huh, one thing? And they open it up, and it's this mannequin with this smile. And they're like, what? And then they look, that's stupid. And they look away for just a second, their eyes, and then it's just gone. And then boom, 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 they're all killed, but you never see any violence. And the second that they are being killed, this young girl's driving past, and in the back of her mirror, she sees this figure. And that's enough to kind of basically curse her. Now she brings this to her home to her friends. Not that she doesn't physically bring it, but she goes back to her friends, and it's a young person hangout kind of movie. And she's like, oh, I saw this thing and it was really crazy. And because she saw it, it now is going to terrorize and haunt her and her friends. And it kind of has to stay alive, or it stays in the reality because somebody sees it and tells somebody else. And now they've also seen it. Now, my issue, there's a couple issues with the movie. I think the first 15, 20 minutes, pretty strong, and it definitely loses steam throughout. But in the reason where I had no problem with It Follows, the way you did when we all left initially, and you and Parker and people like that were like, ah, but it doesn't have rules or whatever. And that just didn't bother me. This movie, every 5 minutes, I'm like, wait a minute, but they looked away and nothing's happening. Wait, they looked at, like, many, many times I had issues with the logic of the actual horror of this movie. Like, sometimes you look away for a second and then you're just dead. And sometimes you look away and it's gone and it's doing other things. And I'm like, what's it? How's it work? That annoyed me a little bit. The mannequin itself is really cool. The most kind of unfortunate part is it's probably low budget, the film. It's got a nice aesthetic, looks really nice, but every piece of dialogue is ADR, and it has this ADR, which when you're watching an Italian film is not a problem, but this is Canadian and everyone's speaking English. It just feels a little off because of that for me, and it didn't feel like a choice. It felt like, oh, we redubbed this entire movie, and I find it a little harder to get in, you know? But the mannequin stuff was cool. There's some characters who are pretty obnoxious by the end. It's like, it really, I would not call this a, you know, it's watchable and kind of got a couple fun moments, but it definitely has some issues. But, you know, it's on Tubi, so it's nice to watch it now free. And it's one of those things where you're like, how will you pull off a killer mannequin when you actually never see it move? Like, so mm-hmm. To pull off a movie where the bad thing never physically moves, and there's not even one big ending where it's like running, or, you know, it's always happening when you're not looking. So probably would have been an amazing 20-minute film, you know, like if you had that concept. But that's Don't Look Away on Tubi.
Okay. The next one I watched, wait, where was this? Was this on Tubi? No, it was on Shudder that I watched. Grave Robbers. This was by far my favorite.
The Cardona or whatever. Yeah.
Ruben Galindo Jr.
Yeah, he did a couple of really cool ones.
He did Don't Panic. And yeah, he's got one before that I really liked that I can't remember.
Is this
the name
on Halloween or not? Because there's two. One's on Halloween and one isn't, of his films.
I don't think this one's
If there's
on
people
Halloween.
Trick-or-treating you, it must be the other one. They're both really fun.
So this one was great. I had so much fun with this. This is on Shudder right now. This is from 1989. Ruben Galindo Jr., who, as we mentioned, Mexican filmmaker, really has a number of just really fun, like 1980s Mexican hits. The setup of this one, we're back in like Inquisition times, and there is this satanic guy who is about to impregnate this woman he has taken captive, and he's trying to create the Antichrist, and he's going to sacrifice her. And all of a sudden these people burst in and they're like, "You swear yourself to Jesus." And he's like, "No, I love Satan." And then that's it. And they kill him and then they bury him. And then we flash forward to real life. And now it's a group of teens, real life being 1989. And it is a group of teens who are camping in the woods, and they're like, "Hey, let's go check out that graveyard over there." And at the same time, there are people robbing the graveyard, and they break open this guy's tomb. Now, one of the teens happens to be a little bit psychic, and she's like, "I feel like there's gold here. I can feel, I can sense there's like golden gems." And so they go into this one tomb, and she's like, "I know, I feel it." And she drops, and they end up in the catacombs, and they basically unearth this satanic guy that had been killed eons ago in this Inquisition style. And so they have unearthed his evil. He comes back basically as a Fulci zombie. It's like a really cool effect. It's really nicely done, very juicy. Comes back as a Fulci zombie and starts picking off campers in the local woods. Like starting with those teens, he gets a couple of them. And then he starts working his way through the other people who are camping in the nearby woods. So it starts as like a satanic supernatural movie, and then it becomes Friday the 13th for a while, where you're seeing these incredibly great kills with really good effects. Like there was just really fun kill sequences in this. And then at the end, it turns back into a satanic supernatural movie because one of the teens that he's been chasing, he decides he wants to now impregnate her with the Antichrist. So he's like targeting her. This was just really fun. It had crazy set pieces, really fun, goopy effects, really good kills, and just really fun 80s vibes as well. Like the hair could not have been higher and the jeans could not have been more frosted. And it was just a really fun movie. So this one on Shudder, I'd had it on my list for a long time and I was thrilled to see that it was still playing there. So yeah, this is Grave Robbers on Shudder. Highly, highly recommend. It's fun.
So for your trip, I'm going to recommend even better than that one is his other, because they came out at the same time there. His other film is, it's probably also there, called Cemetery of Terror. That's why it sounds the same. And that one is set on Halloween night, and a group of teens get a corpse from a local morgue and then do like a satanic ritual with it. And then a serial killer comes back from the dead and starts killing everyone on Halloween. And it's freaking awesome because everyone's wearing Halloween costumes, even though it's probably Mexico, but looks like America. It's like, I remember watching both of them back to back, and Grave Robbers is good, but this one was like even more fun. So I think
Cemetery of Terror.
That should be one of your holiday films. Yeah.
Don't Panic is a hoot. Yeah, so yeah. I feel like
but these are more like Fulci movies. Other two are nothing like Don't Panic. That's what's interesting. Don't Panic's like a comedy basically.
This was very much like a Fulci movie if Zombie from Zombie 2 became Jason. And the effects were just as gory as a Fulci movie. I'm excited. Okay, Cemetery of Terror, I have to hunt
down.
Yeah,
I think
now.
You'll dig.
I feel like some random film festival out there who might happen to be listening to the show, please let Elric and I curate a triple feature of this guy's work. Right, like, I know Don't Panic is with Vinegar Syndrome. Grave Robbers is with Shudder. I feel like we could do this and we could make it work.
These two came to disc, so I can't remember who put them out, but they did. Because they were on my list from one of those books. Wasn't the Bonkers Ass Cinema one? It was one before that about crazy, like the craziest movies,
bizarre cinema.
Yeah, I have had a running list on my computer where I was trying to Strange Cinema Book. They were called, it was called Strange Cinema.
Was that the one with the eyeball?
I think so. Yeah, it was.
It's like a girl eating an eyeball with chopsticks or something.
Yeah, and
like
I had
that.
A list of like 20 movies that I hadn't seen, and these were always on them for the longest time because I couldn't get a copy, and then somebody put them on Blu-ray and then they went to Shudder. So and they're really neat, so that's cool.
I want to curate a night of showing all three of these Galindo. In order, because they're all three such, yeah, let's just do a Galindo trilogy.
They're different enough to be fun. I agree. The next one I watched is like, it's so me, it won't be everyone's favorite movie, but I think it's my favorite thing so far this year, just purely on style, and that is the new Kiyoshi Kurosawa. We were just talking about Door 3 on our
I just watched Door 3 on Deep Cuts.
His brand, it's been a while since he's made a horror, you know, most famous for Kira is like his just flat out masterpiece, but Pulse is what he's probably best known for, just to me one of the modern masters, but hasn't really been making that same vibe for a few years. And he has a brand new film that just finished its kind of initial festival run called Chime. And this is very interesting because here's the kicker. I saw that a couple of people watching. I was like, wait, I thought that just hit a festival. So I start looking into it. It's only 45 minutes. So it's not normal feature. And the way you watch this, it was so, already one listener wrote to me because they didn't trust it either. It looks like the site it's on, I'm not sure if he owns it or how it works, but basically this is how it works. There is a site in Japan to watch this movie. And the way you do it is you go on there and they have sold the film to, I think at the moment it said, we will currently sell it to 25 people. Those 25 people then have, for whatever the set price they've decided the film is worth, then they have the freedom to rent it at any rate they want to as many people. So like 24 hours. So it's actually closer to the original video store model, where somebody would buy an expensive ass videotape and then rent it and make their money back. So people like me could buy this and then be the person who is then renting it out. It's a model I've never seen, but it was also in yen. So I was like, is this going to be, am I buying crypto something? It definitely felt like that because I couldn't understand exactly what I was signing up for, but I did it and it worked perfectly. I then rented it for a 1 day window from somebody who owns the share to share this movie, and there's lots of options, like you can watch it for a week, you could do it for a day, and it cost me like $4, so it worked out for me and I was super excited. But it was such an interesting model that I wanted to talk about it. And today, when
I'm glad that you did that, because I would have gotten there and been like, oh, this is a scam.
It did scare me with my credit
card. Y'all trying to get my credit card number, and that's all there is.
It could go bad. But somebody did write me today because they saw my Letterboxd review on Instagram. Somebody instantly wrote and goes, wait, did you watch it on this site? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, so what happens? And I kind of explained that it was fine as far as I could tell. Anyway, worth it, because the thing about Kurosawa, I mean, I love his movies, and I'm going to be talking about another one, older one, later on. But this is basically back to the exact, it's like the purest form of what he does best, which is existential dread that, like, no one else in movies, the way he makes you feel. He doesn't need a big bad. He just shows things slowly growing in tension. And in this one, because it's 45 minutes, it's like he's been able to excise all the plot mechanics and all the stuff that you rely on to build a character up, and then all the kind of padding that goes into a movie. This is just absolutely purest form. I don't even think this is necessarily lesser by him. I think this will be in his normal filmography. It opens with a Japanese chef at a kind of a culinary school where he's teaching people who aren't probably going to really go on with it, but it's like what he's doing. He's a bit of a perfectionist, and one of his students just keeps like staring off into the distance and acting weird, and he's like, do you hear the chime? I hear the sound. Do you hear it? And the chef's like, I don't hear anything. And this guy keeps falling behind in class and acting weirder and weirder. And it builds and builds until something really violent happens from that character. But then, talking about the chime, somebody else starts to hear it. And bad things keep growing out of like these very innocent, quiet shots. And he goes back to his family and you meet them and he's up for this job, and everything just starts growing and growing and growing in tension, to it's almost unbearable by the end, just the feeling of dread, even though you're not, there are some violent images and you will see some stuff. It's, I mean, it's 100% a horror film. It is just fucking so rad. It's, I mean, yes, you could say it's an exercise because it's 45 minutes, but it really feels like what he does best and only he can really do with this kind of filmmaking. So good. Highly, highly recommend looking for it. I don't know if it's ever going to come to anywhere beyond that site. This might just be how they've decided, because it's a different length type of movie, to put it out in the world. But it did play festivals. So, I was really excited when I saw that. I think it was Travis Steven. I saw somebody who had just watched it, and I was like, what? I didn't think that was coming out for a long time. So it got me digging around. So
can I rent it from you?
No, I would have had to be one of the buyers. So they only could sell so many. So they probably just decided, and those people can resell it. So you don't, I think only 25 people can have the right to rent it. And if they want to resell it to someone else, they can do that, or they can keep it as a rental and decide, but they can choose their cost to rent it. So they could have asked $100 from me. I just wouldn't have paid it, but if they're allowed to. So it looked like a pretty interesting, it's worth looking it up. Even if you don't rent this, to just look at the website, and I've forgotten what it was, but it'll be easy enough. If you write Chime new film streaming, you'll find it. I just haven't come across that model yet, and I'm not a big fan of some of the models at the moment. I just don't think they're that sustainable for the artists to make money, obviously.
It's so weird because it's all come out in the last 10 years, where I was such a big fan of streaming, and I still am. I love the idea that I can just be like, I feel like watching blank movie. I'm going to watch Baby Jane, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And I can just Google it. And the majority of the time I will find it streaming somewhere. And if not, it costs me $2 and I never have to leave my house and I can watch it in sweatpants. I love the fact that that is how the world exists, that I can find any movie I want right now on my computer. That said, what I don't like is that a couple of months ago, it was actually part of an academic research that was happening at USC, where I had one of the grad students was looking at the number of platforms that people belong to. I pay so much more now than I ever did for cable. Even if I was to get cable right now, I pay way more than I would pay for cable right now. But it's
some you don't even watch, except if it gets a new movie. Like, that's how I am with things like Peacock. It's like, I've probably gone there like 4 times and I'm still been paying for it. Like, it's,
I try to be like really rigorous about quitting things after seasons end, but you're always going to forget. Like, Evil, the new season of Evil is coming back. It's the last season of Evil. I'm really excited about it. Only on Paramount Plus. I will rejoin Paramount Plus to watch that season. And then once I'm done, I'll quit until the new Paw Patrol movie comes out, or whatever it is that I have to have then. And I try to be really rigorous about it. But then there are other ones that I'm just kind of like, I let it ride, like my Hulu, my Netflix, my Disney. I belong to History Channel.
I see you're like, letting the ones ride that do have enough new content constantly to make it worthwhile. That's what's tricky about them. But the ones that are like, we sometimes get something really good, and then for a long time, you're never going to look at me. It makes it tougher. To have those. Yeah.
And then any of the ones that are genre, like I do Night Flight, Shudder, Screambox, any of the ones that are vaguely, Criterion, I do those as well. And I spend so much fucking money on streaming services now. And then I keep thinking about how much of a pain in the ass it has become for me to kind of think about what's on all of these at any given time. And then I'm like, God, I wish we could just put everything in one place. And then I'm basically describing cable again. I don't know. It didn't turn out the way that I wanted it to, which is everything all in one place.
And I agree. There's a lot of pluses, of course. There's a lot of pluses about being able to see things when you want to. And obviously, mixed with physical media, there's a good balance. But I do miss just going, oh, that thing's coming on TV and I have this one chance to see it, or one chance to record it. That also made things feel quite special, especially growing up. That's just how it felt. But
a lot of the streaming platforms that I've had conversations with recently are trying to bring back the idea of what television used to call the day and date, which was, this thing will be on 8 o'clock on Tuesday night, and this is it. And if you miss it, this is it. So a lot of them are trying to bring back a live streaming service, as well as kind of that day and date attitude. That said, it's hard because nobody's prepared for that. If somebody told me I had to watch something at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, I expect it to be like a theater thing, or it's nothing that we're like prepared for anymore. So
yeah,
I don't know how it'll work, or even if Paramount Plus is now live streaming and it becomes like a day and date thing, it becomes terrestrial streaming again, and thus we have moved back, and they have ultimately become, a network at that point. So, yeah, wild things to think about. I have no idea what the industry is doing, is what I'm saying. It's like the fucking Wild West here.
And they certainly don't know. We might not know, but the people running the stream absolutely have no idea. They are trying to figure it out on the fly, that's for sure.
Well, on that, let's go to a Netflix title. So this, I will say, is horror adjacent, but I really enjoyed it, and I think a lot of our listeners will as well. I watched a new show on Netflix called Bodkin, and this is a murder mystery show, but it's about a true crime podcast. It's a murder mystery true crime show, but it's got all these folk horror notes. And I will say, I have not finished it. I am on episode four, and so I'm pretty deep in enough that I really wanted to talk about it this week because I've been enjoying it so much. It is about a gritty female investigative reporter. She's a journalist in London, and she's been investigating this kind of gangster guy. She ends up seeing too much, and they think that she is, and they notice that some of the informants are getting killed off. And so they're like, oh my God, you're in danger. We got to get you out of here. And so the newspaper that she's working for, the outfit that she's working for, is like, we got to get you out of here. You've seen too much. A lot of the informants are dying. So they decide that to send her along with a podcaster. So it's a news network. They have a true crime podcast. And they're like, you're going to go to Ireland and you're going to go with one of our lead podcasters who's got this true crime podcast he's doing. And you're going to go with him and you're going to investigate this shit that's happening in this like tiny little rural Irish town. And she is very much like, no, I want to be in London investigating these like gangster underbellies of all the crime that's happening. But instead, she gets teamed up with Will Forte, who most people know, American comedian from like Last Man on Earth. He's done a ton of stuff. He is the podcaster.
Wait, isn't he
And
MacGruber?
is he
I
MacGruber?
think he's MacGruber.
I haven't seen
I'm
MacGruber.
pretty sure he is
Is
MacGruber.
MacGruber a good movie?
No, I mean it's got funny
Your
parts.
face just said, fuck
No, I mean,
no.
but he, but of course it's got funny stuff because we are
Your
MacGyver.
face just looked like you ate a lemon.
I mean, good is an abstract term, but I mean, is it got moments of pure brilliance? Yes.
Is Will Forte
Will
MacGruber?
Forte is indeed MacGruber. I just looked up.
Okay. So I've never seen MacGruber because I'd heard exactly what your face just told me. So it was never on the top of my viewing list. But Will Forte plays the true crime podcaster, and she has basically been teamed up with him. And whereas his approach is very much like he's very calm, he very much sounds like a like an NPR guy where he's like, we're just gonna go in. He's got an assistant with a task cam. We're just gonna go ask people some very calm questions about, what happened here. And she is very much like, I'm gonna steal files, I'm gonna rip this shit apart, I will stomp on your neck if you don't give me the information, Jimmy. And so it's very much different styles. But what they are investigating for this particular podcast that she doesn't want to be doing is it is a really small, rural, coastal town in Ireland where for the they used to have this massive Samhain festival every year, this like massive Halloween fall festival or Samhain. And they would have, which is how they say it, have they would have this massive Halloween festival every year. Folk festival. It was very much all about kind of the Celtic Samhain. But then for the last 3 years that they had it, somebody disappeared without a trace after every single one of the festivals, on the night of every single one of the festivals. And all of the locals are very much like, we don't want you fucking podcast people here. They're just drunk assholes that got drunk at the big like folk celebration that we do and fell into the sea. And
Truth,
that's what happened.
podcasters, truth.
Podcaster's truth. But they are there because they believe that there is some type of crime happening. But when they get there, what you immediately start getting notes of is folk horror, that there is something kind of Wicker Man happening. So this, it's a dark comedy because Will Forte is your lead playing the podcaster. You know it's going to be a dark comedy, and it does have these incredibly dark comedic moments to it. But it is this true crime podcaster who is in this tiny little Irish town investigating these deaths around a Celtic folk festival, and immediately you start getting, I don't know if it's going serial killer or if it is going folk horror, but the reviews of it so far, I'm on episode four and loving it. the reviews of the full season have been like, holy fuck, this was like an onion that kept on peeling itself and that it gets really good. So this is Bodkin. It is on Netflix and I am absolutely loving it so far. Right now, it just feels like a dark comedy about a small town of overly nice weirdos, but it's got this kind of like weird Wicker Man serial killer vibe going on.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking of killers, serial killers, from the 90s, the mid 90s, one of my favorite movies to recommend is a film called Night Watch, the original Danish version of that. The American remake by the same director a few years afterwards, Ole Bernadel, is also watchable, but with Ewan McGregor, it's just nowhere near as good. The original just has an atmosphere about it. It's about Nikolai Coster-Waldau from Game of Thrones. He is a medical student who gets a job at a morgue and does the after-hours night watch shift. And something really, the first half, you kind of feel like it's going to be a ghost film. And then the second half, there's this guy who is killing and scalping women. And then he ends up catching Nikolai and his girlfriend, and he's going to kill them. And his friend is this guy, Kim Bodina, who you definitely recognize in movies. He's been in many, many movies since. Anyway, it's a very atmospheric movie. The last thing I think in my entire life I expected was a legacy sequel 30 years later to that movie with the same cast. Like, my brain almost melted when this came to Shudder this week. And I was like, oh my, like, who makes a making a legacy sequel to the Halloween movies made sense. Making a legacy sequel to this is just the most exciting thing ever. And I couldn't believe it. So I watched it and somehow it is not disappointing. Like, it's actually really fun. It's not as good as the original, but it's the same guy. Nikolai Coster-Waldau has been kind of hiding that he had survived this for 30 years. This is literally 30 years ago. The director's daughter is this actress, Fanny Leander Bornadel. I really liked her in the lead of this. She's like 23. She is a young medical student. She's the daughter of, you know, Nikolai. She has no clue her dad had that happen to him. That's not a story he ever told. Her mom's recently died, and she works at a hospital. She finds these documents that when in a kind of attic that tell the story of what happened to her dad and mom 30 years before, and she can't believe it. And she gets the same job just because she wants to learn about it. Her and her dad don't really talk very well. They don't communicate well. So she takes this job and starts hearing about the story from other people. Oh yeah, that's the guy who survived that night and that serial killer. And, you know, and then she's like, well, how did the serial killer die? Die? He didn't die. He was just in coma. So we thought he died in the original movie. And he is in this hospital and he's basically like a mental shutdown, has just not communicated in 30 years, blah, blah, blah. So she kind of, by digging around, kind of reawakens things. But in this case, it's this young, obsessed patient who's only like, you know, looks like he's 18, who starts doing the bidding of the guy who's in the wheelchair and thing. And all the other characters come back. His buddy comes back into the story from the original. And it's a bit more sprawling. It's a bit more like, oh, who's the psycho? And there's some really scary thing. There's a part where they take like a plaster cast of the original killer's face and the guy starts wearing it. When I say this legacy sequel, it's like this movie couldn't even mean anything if you didn't watch the other one first. Like, if somebody just sits down on Shudder and goes, ooh, what's Night Watch? Demons Are Forever, which is the title. I don't know what that experience would be like. It probably could still work as a movie, but like, you really need to watch Night Watch first, because it's like, this is a direct, and you could do worse than that double this week.
Which is great. Yeah. That's such a good movie.
It's really cool. And I joked on my Letterboxd review, but I really mean it. This is as weird as somebody making a Mute Witness 30 years later with the same character. Like, it's that obscure, like, not in its home country. That's probably why it got made, because in its home country, it was probably a huge hit and it launched an American sequel. And so, you know, I can see why Shudder, and for Shudder, it's going to be people who've watched Night Watch. So I get that. But it looks a pretty big movie. And it's not like a cheapy, quick knockoff sequel. It feels like a real movie. I actually had a lot of fun watching it. It brought me back to my feelings about the original. And I like seeing the character. It's you know, it's got a couple cool twists. It's nothing on the original, but they're definitely fun pairing. So I'm just happy somebody made a sequel to this movie. I'm very, very surprised about that.
That is awesome. I've seen the original. Yeah. I haven't seen it since it came out in the 90s, but that is awesome.
And please listen to me when I say, don't just go, well, there's an original and an American. The American's in English. Let's watch that. Trust me, watch the original first. Then you can watch the American and have fun, because it's so over the top in some ways. And it's got good people like Josh Brolin and Ewan McGregor, but it does not connect the dots the way the original does. Kind of like what's the disappearing movie? It's not called The Disappear, The Vanishing. The original. I don't mind the remake, The Vanishing, but the teeth on the original, you cannot get even close to that. The way that film stings and feel. That's another great movie, The Vanishing. Anyway, a little bit of fun.
Okay. I got one quick book to mention because it's coming out in, actually, we'll be back before this comes out. It comes out, I believe, mid to late August, but I just loved it, so I have to mention it. So, and this is from friend of the show, Nathan Ballingroot.
Oh, cool.
Has a new horror, science fiction, surreal, what the fuck weirdness book that I absolutely loved called Crypt to the Moon Spider. And this is one of my favorite type of books, the how the fuck did you ever come up with this idea book? So Nathan Ballingroot, he's done a ton of horror stuff. Like he's
they made the movie out of one of his stories.
Wounds, Monsterland became a series on Hulu. Yep. North American Lake Monsters is one of my favorite books. He did one called Visible Filth that was really good. Just a really great horror writer who's just been doing this for years. He's just a master of the short story. So he has a new book coming out in August called Crypt to the Moon Spider, and it's part of a trilogy called the Lunar Trilogy. And like I said, this is one of my favorite subsections of books, which is just the, how the fuck did you come up with this idea? And that I love it because it's just so surreal. So the setup of this is that it's 1923. And there is a housewife who seems to be very well kept. She's definitely got like a husband. He views her as a pet. He actually calls her pet repeatedly. But they're not poor. And she is suffering from depression. They call it melancholia in the book. And so when you have melancholia in this time and you are wealthy, you are transported to the moon. Mm. And the moon, in this case, long ago, the moon used to be inhabited by this absolutely giant spider who lived in the middle of the moon. And it wove all of these different webs. And what they now do to cure depression in this 1923 alternate universe is they take pieces of the spider's old web. The spider is long since dead, but his web is still there. And they take pieces of this massive web that fills the moon, and they use it as connective fibers in your brain to cure depression. Hmm. And so she has now been taken by her oppressive husband to this melancholia home on the moon to have this treatment done. But what you realize pretty quickly is that it's not without side effects, that there is a group of people who worship the spider. There's like a cult element to it. And then at the same time, the people who now have parts of the spider in their brain, there's repercussions for that as well, because you have parts of a giant spider in your brain. Huh. And it gets super horrific. There's a lot of brain surgery, which is fun. Are you into brain surgery and giant spiders? This one's for you. So yeah, it sounds like just total what the fuckery. And I love it because it is so surreal. And some of the stuff that is in there, it's just so left field, but somehow it paints this world that makes total sense. And there's just, it was great. Like this is not going to be for, I will say this probably won't be for everyone just because it is so far out there. This is not, I bought a house and it's haunted and here's the ghost boo type horror novel. This was very surreal, very cerebral, very much like I am going completely into this brand new world that this guy has built and I am just in. So yeah, that is Crypt of the Moon Spider. I loved this. And it's short. It's very much like a novella. I think it was maybe 100 pages. I read the entire thing in two afternoons and it was just a treat, a very dark, twisted, fucked up treat.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. Yeah, I think he has like a mind for like a sort of cosmic horror that not many people do. Like when I look back through the Lake Monster, whatever that one, North American Lake Monster.
North American Lake Monster. Yeah, there's
just
certain,
I think he sent it to us once and I was just like reading through it going like, this is like, he gets something that I don't think many people are on that wavelength and it's cool.
And this is at the end of the day, cosmic horror, but there's a lot of other elements coming into it. It is that kind of the greater God, the greater belief system, understanding something that no one else does yet. Like it's all those trappings of cosmic horror, but it's just kind of the world is so surreal that that gets kind of lost in the holy shit. How the fuck did you come up with this? It's fun. Yeah, I had fun with
cool.
it. Okay.
When we come back, we will be doing a quick fire 10 deep cut recommendations that are streaming for you guys to watch over your summer while we are off air. And we will just go boom, 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 back and forth.
Sure, we will.
We will. This is quick. This is like a rapid fire. That's why I use the words rapid fire.
Okay, let's go get some tea and coffee, and we will be right back.
Who doesn't love a campy horror flick with a message? Dear Camp 86 is coming to select theaters nationwide on May 31st. The film follows six knuckleheads from Detroit who travel up north to the annual tradition of deer hunting, but something horrific has been awakened and the hunters become the hunted as an ancient evil spirit seeks vengeance for the death of a Native American girl. Let the fun, beer, gore, and revenge begin. Visit www.deercamp86.com to find showtimes near you.
Welcome back to Fangoria's Colors of the Dark.
So formal.
So formal. It is so formal. So what we are going to do, we figured that because we are going to be down for a couple of weeks while we're on break, we wanted to leave you with some really good stuff to watch. So we are going to hit you with what will finally be, it's 10 and 10. So a total of 20 deep cut streaming recs that you need to go watch right now that'll keep you supplied for the next couple of weeks while we are on vacation. So we've got 10 each. So we're going to quick fire these back and forth along with the platform. Should we go by platform or do we just go?
I put them in the order of just, I just did movies and it didn't end up all in one platform. So we'll just bounce around. And I also will say a lot of mine at least are things that have come up on our actual show, Deep Cuts. Mm-hmm. Just so some of them are just reminders to go watch these things. But yeah, let's just rock back and forth so people have some fun things to check out.
Okay, I am going to kick us off with, where do I start? You know where I'm starting? I'm starting with Turbulence 3 Heavy Metal, which is currently on Tubi. I know, I'm just going for the throat right now. Turbulence 3 Heavy Metal on Tubi. You do not need to watch Turbulence 1. Turbulence 2 is hit or miss. Turbulence 3 is fucking beautiful. It is about a goth metal show on a plane, and then horror happens. And that's really all you need to know. It's great. It's just a great movie.
I you guys have recommended that so many people, like, for the last couple of years. I still have never watched it. I don't think, I must have seen two. I just don't remember it. And one,
no
one
one's
was fine,
seen but... one or, yeah, one was fine. Yeah. I don't think anybody has seen two. Yeah. Three is amazing. Elric, it is on Tubi. Go watch it.
Also on Tubi, in my number 10 spot, one that you know I love from an Animal Attacks episode, I think of Pure Cinema, we did together. And that is Kingdom of the Spiders. Director John Budcarlos. This is 1977. This is William Shatner as a veterinarian of a rural Arizona town, and they come across all these killer tarantulas. But then he figures out that they're actually migrating, and their town lays right on the path. While I guess there's a centenary or some big event's going to happen, and there are just thousands of these tarantulas overrunning them, and they end up trapped in this place. It is awesome, and all the time he's like trying to chat up this other, this other lady staying there. And Shatner is in fine form in this movie. It's my favorite, like kind of tarantula spider movie. I just think it's the best. So, a good one to get some epic spider action.
My next one is also on Tubi. We're at our nine spots now. So my next one is also from Tubi. This is one that I think I talked about on Shockwaves. I don't think I've mentioned it on this version of the show. Time Lapse from 2014. Yeah. And this is sci-fi horror, and it is about a group of kids, or they're young adults, like in their 20s. They discover a mysterious old camera that takes pictures. Take a picture,
I remember this,
the picture that will develop is exactly 24 hours in the future.
But across the street they're taking photos, right?
Across the street. So they're taking pictures of themselves across. It's an apartment complex. Yeah. So they're taking, it's a massive camera and they can't move it, so they're taking pictures across the street. That's cool. Of their apartment. And so, like, if you hold up a newspaper ad that says like winning lottery numbers will be drawn tomorrow night at 8 o'clock and take a picture of it, the picture that develops will show the winning lottery numbers. And so it's always showing what's happening 24 hours in advance. And at first they're using it for personal gain, like who's winning horse races, you know, who's winning baseball games, things like that, so they can place bets on it. But then shit starts getting really dark, where they start seeing like people dying and accidents that are going to happen and things like that. And it gets really horrific as it goes along. This one, it starts out sci-fi and then it goes like really creepy in the latter part. So that is Time Lapse from 2014, currently on Tubi.
Yeah, and it's kind of indie, which I dig. My next one's super indie, the most independent on my list. It is a number 9 spot called Threshold. This is a film that is on the Arrow Player. Arrow actually released this movie. It is an indie from the festival circuit, circa 2020, by director Paul Robinson and Patrick Robert Young. And the reason this one got, this one was important for me. This is a film where a young guy has to go, has been told by his parents to look for his sister. I think she's the older sister. And she's had some trouble with drugs and alcohol. And he's like talking to her. And she says, no, it's not the drugs. It's not the alcohol right now. I was with this group of people, kind of like a cult, and they bound me to this other member. And if the other member feels pain, I feel pain. And they're out there somewhere and we're joined and it could kill me, basically. And it's like really weird concept. And so it becomes a cross-country road trip with this brother and sister as they're trying to find the person she's bound to try to like free them of this curse. And it ends up being some cult stuff and some kind of slightly witchy stuff. There's a really like super indie. Apparently, I think the script was done on the road, like as they were going, they were working some of this out, but it doesn't feel that way. And it's just it was one of my favorite indies of that year. And the reason it was impactful is because of this movie. The lead in this, Joey Millen, I cast as one of our main guys in our office in our film because of this movie. I hadn't seen him in anything else. This movie I saw and I was like, oh, what is this? And so, and he ended up being, you know, terrific. So, but I really like this one. And Arrow Player's got some really cool stuff, but this is like, you know, one of the most indie films they have. So look it up, Threshold.
Okay, I got one more Tubi before I move on to other streaming platforms. And I'm going with Even the Wind is Afraid. Oh, yeah. So years ago, we had, right after she had made Tigers Are Afraid, Tigers Are Not Afraid, we had Issa Lopez, who has since gone on to blow up with the new season of True Detective. We had her on, God, I don't even remember which show it was. But anyway, she was a guest on one of our shows. And when she had come on for her film, Tigers Are Not Afraid, we asked her, like, recommend us the best scariest Mexican movie that you've got. And she said, Even the Wind is Afraid. And I was like, okay, I'm in. I dig the title. Let's take a look at this. And it is a haunted boarding school possession story from 1968. Really tight Mexican horror film. So this is currently streaming on Tubi. Even the Wind is Afraid.
It feels classic. Like as you're watching it, yeah, it feels such so well made. And yeah.
Yeah.
It was
it's
nice
got
surprise.
Kind of like, and it's because it is kids horror as well. It just feels like a classy, like 1960s film. Yeah. So yeah, this is great.
My number eight is one I haven't seen this in like 15 years, but it's so good. And I've been doing it for a rewatch. It's called The Sender. This one is only on Amazon, but it's from 1982. Funnily enough, I was like, did the director ever do anything else good? Roger Christian's his name. The only thing of note was much later, Battlefield Earth. Not a
good oh movie. My god,
that's what's crazy about this movie. This movie is so accomplished and like well made and interesting. It is that guy Zico Ivanek is the actor, and he, most people would know, he was the kind of older head of the whole vampire in True Blood, you know, the kind of white-haired lawyer looking guy who was like in charge of all of them for the first few seasons of True Blood. He was like one of the main, he might have just been the lawyer for them, I can't recall, but he was like a really good actor. This is him young, and he's like this disturbed guy who seems to have these telepathic abilities. He's on a beach, where a public beach, where he tries to commit suicide. He gets put in a hospital and they just call him John Doe because they don't know who he is. And what we start to realize is he has the ability, the sender means he has the ability, the visions and things he sees, he's able to send that to the minds of other people that they see it. And maybe these things are even becoming real. And it's just a super interesting visual, really well-made horror film that I'm kind of personally dying to rewatch it after all these years. Mm-hmm. And I did not realize, I'm a little surprised because it doesn't seem like his kind of movie, but I did read in the IMDb of it, it did say this was Tarantino's favorite horror movie of 1982, according to the commentary on Hot Fuzz. So it's interesting because it's quite I would say that's kind of an intellectual horror film in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's definitely a good one for people if they haven't seen it. The Sender.
Standing. Okay, heading to our number seven spots. And since we're talking Amazon Prime, There I Shall Stay, with Uzumaki. Oh, yeah. From 2000. You guys know I'm a huge Junji Ito fan. There have only been a couple of Junji Ito's works that have been taken to screen. But this is probably kind of the most well-known one here in the States. I know there's been a few other ones in Japan, but this is what, you know, the one that has kind of cross the seas the best. This is Uzumaki, also known as Spiral, based on his manga series. And it is about a town where one day one person becomes obsessed with the spiral to the point of death eventually. And others kind of just start following suit, and they're obsessed with spirals, turning themselves into spirals, staring at spirals. One guy shoves himself in a washing machine so that his body forms a spiral. Somebody wraps themselves around a tire. Kids start turning into snails because of the spiral snail shell. And it's basically about a town descending into madness. Junji Ito is so hard to do because of that kind of cerebral quality of like, make a movie about a town obsessed with a spiral shape. Like it's something that's really hard to do. This one does it incredibly well. It does it so that it's still a really fun, watchable movie that also has the kind of absurdity that Ito brings in. Like a lot of his stuff, it's creepy when you read it on the page, but it could be hilariously not on screen, and somehow this is able to make it creepy, but absolutely absurd. Like it's able to embrace how kind of absurd everything is. And that's what makes it creepy. So Uzumaki, AKA Spiral from 2000, currently on Amazon Prime.
Number seven is one I talked about a few weeks ago on our Patreon. It's one of my favorite first time for me movies on Tubi again. That is Happy Hell Night. Director Brian Owen. This is 92, but it really feels like one of the last 80s slashers that you may not have seen. It is set at a fraternity hazing prank gone wrong in the past. And in the past, it's Sam Rockwell playing a character. Like this must have been one of his first roles. And then later, when it goes into the future, he's now a much older man played by Darren McGavin, Night Stalker himself. So it's pretty cool to see those two playing each other. But yeah, you're at this college, and then somebody does a kind of a hazing prank that where they have to go and find the original killer that from this original prank played by this character, a psycho priest called Malleus. And he comes back out of this asylum and starts killing people all over again because of this prank. And it is the creepiest killer I've seen in absolute years. Really great look, great creepy vibe. You know, some silly one-liners that undercut it a little bit. But it's a really, really genuinely fun early 90s slasher. So I have to keep recommending this one because it's so fun.
My number six is also on Prime, and that is Reefer Madness, the musical. So I was probably like a month and a half ago, Graham Skipper and I over on Scream Drafts drafted the best horror musicals. This placed really high, like in our top five. It is such a great horror musical. It is a very on point, self-aware satire of the original Reefer Madness movie from the 1930s. And it is calling attention to everything. Nothing is sacred in this movie. It is literally just satirizing everything, specifically kind of 1930s through 50s, you know, culture and the whole fear surrounding drugs. But that says it goes full like horror with zombies. It's got an amazing cast of people in this. So yeah, if you are even remotely into your horror musicals, check out Reefer Madness, the musical, currently on Amazon Prime.
Okay. Number six for me is a movie called Scarecrows, and that is from 1988.
I love this one.
Yeah, so this one I had seen, and so this was on the stream. It's probably on other streamers too, but the one I picked for me is called Screen Picks, and I've been on this one for a little while through my Amazon app, so it's like one of those add-ons. But they have a lot of cool stuff. A lot of stuff that I just had been looking for will suddenly pop up there and look great. But this movie was part of an all-nighter or one of those, you know, 12-hour are things that Phil did maybe just a few months ago. And it was like a pristine 35 millimeter print that had almost, because this was kind of a direct, it wasn't completely direct to video, but it almost was. And when I had seen this when I was young, I just could hardly see the image. I thought it was creepy, but like it was so dark, and watching in the theater really, man, it really elevated this movie for me. It is criminals have hijacked a plane and it's about to crash. It's about to land, and some guy, one of the people who had committed this crime, rips the other guys off and jumps out in the middle of like this field, taking the money with him. So the plane has to land. The plane's also been, you know, they've hijacked it. So they've got the pilot and his daughter held captive. And they're kind of cheesy mercenary types. You know, that part of the movie is a little cheesy, but they end up in this, field, wheat field or whatever it is. And there are these very Fulci-esque, truly creepy looking scarecrows put all up all over the place. And as the people start getting separated, these scarecrows start to come to life, and it becomes a brutal, brutal slasher film. Like, the kills are hard. Like, they are not soft at all. It is pretty ugly the way these scarecrows go about it. It's nothing funny about it, nothing cute. It is a kind of a, you know, it's, I just think it's really fun, and these movies definitely don't get made anymore quite like this. As I was watching, I was like, man, it'd be a fun remake to do this and find an angle that you could, you know, do this in a believable way. Because obviously it's got a bit of the From Dusk Till Dawn where I'm watching a crime film, and then, ooh, this isn't a crime film anymore. Anyway, I really like Scarecrows. It's a fun one.
So next up for me is on Screenbox. We are now in, what slot are we in? Hold on. I wrote this down and then I moved my screen around. Five. So five for me is over at Screenbox, and that is Blood on Satan's Claw from 1971. This is another one that was like super hard to find for a long time. So much so that when Elric used to own a cafe in Studio City, Jump Cut Cafe, I procured a like totally bootleg copy of Blood on Satan's Claw. And we hosted a, you know, only invite friends and family quiet private screening of the bootleg, because like nobody had been able to see it at this time. And we were just so excited to have a copy of it exist that we were like, everybody gather, we must watch this thing. This is now streaming on Screenbox, which is awesome. Came out through Severin. David Gregory did some beautiful restoration stuff with this one. The setup of this, it is true British folk horror about a group of kids, and I believe it's supposed to be 17th century England, who are in this very kind of rural, very Christian town, unearth a corpse, and it's like a weird deformed corpse, and that they find in a field, and it's got a claw, and the kids of the town, specifically led by this one teen girl, Angel, become convinced that it has unleashed evil in the town, and that they're now going to worship it like the devil. And so the kids in the town basically form a coven and start like trying to sacrifice other kids in the town. And so it really is like this folk horror infusion of evil coming into this town via the kids who are forming this like weird little like folky satanic cult. And it's fun. It's really fun. It's true folk horror. And then at the end, a guy shows up with like a ginormous sword and tries to smack everybody back into the Christian shape. But yeah, Blood on Satan's Claw on Screenbox, really hard to see for a really long time. So I'm just glad it's streaming somewhere. Thank you, Screenbox.
And my number five has to be one of my favorite midnight movies of all time. And that is on Shudder. And that is Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, aka Night Warning. But more importantly, I'm also bringing it up here for twofold, because it's also playing on a film print this month at the New Beverly at midnight. I think it will be one of the single greatest midnight. I'm very tempted to go. I've only seen it on a screen once, and it was in the middle of an all-nighter, and it blew the roof off. I don't think I've ever been in a screening where a performance blew away an audience quite like Susan Tyrell in this film. This is 1981, one of the weirdest family dynamic movies you will ever see. Basically, his parents are killed in an accident at the start, and he goes to live with his aunt, who is Susan Tyrell, and she is utterly, utterly bonkers and doesn't want him to have girlfriends or friends and wants him all to herself. And it becomes one of the strangest relationship movies. And then also Bo Svenson from Walking Tall sequels is a very rednecky, racist, sexist, homophobic cop who's hilarious in it. Bill Paxton, similar vibes, very early role. It is a movie that must be seen to be believed. And I am a huge fan of this one. We just talked about it last night on a calendar, yeah. But I was like, yeah, this is great. Me and you have talked about it recently.
I watched it on Deep Cuts probably 2 months ago. It was, I brought back the Blu-ray from it after we went to Knoxville. And so I watched it shortly after that.
Yeah. So I might go back to the midnight screen, but for those who don't live in LA, it is on Shudder.
That's awesome. Video Nasty. Watch it while you can.
Yeah.
Okay, so in my number four spot, let's take it to also on Shudder from 1987, Prom Night. Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2.
Yeah, man.
Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2. This is from 1987. This is just such a good movie. Honestly, it's one of those where I think it's better than the original. Like, Prom Night is okay. It's just a very kind of generic slasher. But Hello, Mary Lou, Prom Night 2 has style to it. It is about a girl, Mary Lou Maloney, who is accidentally dies during a prank back in the 1950s. And now kids in the 1980s have brought back her spirit and she's possessing people, and it just has amazing effects. It's a fun fucking supernatural slasher film. So this one, it's got this amazing effect where the blackboard comes to life and people are reaching out of it and all the letters start swirling around. Just really tight effects, directed by Bruce Pittman. So this one is on Shudder now. Don't miss Hello, Mary Lou.
Yeah, I always say if Michael Ironside's your principal, bad things are in store.
Bad things are going to happen.
He should never be a principal. I love that film. Number four, one of my favorite Australian horror films, and just one that was, you know, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have even been able to find it, no matter how hard you tried, but now you can see a beautiful version. It's from the Scream Box. I am going with Next of Kin.
Good title.
Yeah, this is a great movie. Director Tony Williams, who's a Kiwi, not an Aussie. Very important to point that out. This is from 82. I'd grown up watching the trailer to this because the local, you know, our VHSs would be the same movies as you and the same cuts of trailers, but with an Aussie trailer guy voice. So we're growing up in New Zealand, you would see all these movies with these amazing trailers, but it was always said, are you ready for the shot? But it was always the Aussie version. And I saw the trailer of this like 100 times and never saw the film until, you know, eight or so years ago when I was always curious because it has all these, it's probably the most Lynchian trailer I've ever seen. Like it's just all old people underwater, photography, dying, drowning, weird sounds. Anyways,
the bathtub stuff, yeah,
it's very
is
shining
really
in the it's also very shining in the movie. But what's mm-hmm. so cool about this, it's a woman has to come home because she's inherited from her mom a retirement village. We were just talking about retirement homes at the start of the show, and she starts reading her mother's diary and this kind of stalking and dark deaths that are being recounted by her mother from the past start happening to her and become so the, you know, present is mirroring the past and people are dying. There's these very dreamy scenes with old people. And it is one of the most truly Argento-ish, truly, it's like the one true Aussie giallo. There's actual giallos made in Australia that don't feel like giallos. This one feels like a giallo or Hitchcockian Deep Red kind of vibe too. Such a good movie. And it has the last 15 minutes are like showstopper action set pieces where you're like, what? Where did this just go up another gear? Love this film. I think Severin put out the disc on this, but Screenbox for those of you who don't want to own it.
Go for it. Okay, number three spot for me is back over on Shudder, and this is Nomads from 1986. This is another one that it was like a flashbulb moment for me where I had seen this as a kid, and then for years, I couldn't remember what I had seen. It was a horror film about a scientist studying gutter punks. And then years later, I realized what it was that I had seen, and it was Nomads, directed by John McTiernan. And the setup of this is that it is an anthropologist who studies nomadic groups. And he is in Los Angeles and he gets fascinated with kind of the gutter punk street scene of Los Angeles in the 1980s, the kids who live in the streets, how they're moving around. And as he is studying these various nomadic groups of the street kids of LA, he realizes that some of the street kids are supernatural, that there's something different about them. And he becomes kind of their target. They start following him as well because they realize that he's realized what they are. And yeah, so this one, I like this because there's nothing else like it. Like it just doesn't fit into any subgenre I can think of. I've never seen a story like this before or after it. It's just like a completely different supernatural adventure. And I like the idea of the supernatural beings that move around so people don't get hip to what they are. So that is Nomads, currently on Shudder.
Yeah, that was one I've only seen it once when I was young and didn't get it. Like I really didn't get it when I was young. I was like, what? Because the cover was one thing. And Brian on the other show has also been talking about this one a lot lately and also rediscovering it and being like, it's really good. And so it's funny.
Yeah,
both
it's
of
great.
You I've heard that from. So it's a time to.
It's worth a rewatch.
Time to rewatch to see Pierce. Doesn't Pierce Brosnan have like a French accent or something?
He does. He's supposed to be a French and anthropologist. Yeah.
I think this next one, I don't believe you've seen. This is one that was in the Danny Perry cult books for years, but there was no copy of it for the last like 30 years. I didn't get to see it till a new company put it out about a year ago. Massacre at Central High.
Have not seen this.
I think this would be a good one for you to watch this summer because it's not hard. It's more like a 80s. It's from 76, but it feels like an 80s, not Death Wish, but those kind of movies. So it's basically a high school kid has been transferred to a new school, and he's like a cool kid, very confident, and he turns out he has got one old friend at the school, played by Andrew Stevens, who's the Charles Bronson's cop partner in what's that cool LA serial killer one where the guy runs naked down the street at the end, 10 to midnight. The crazy.
10 to midnight. Yeah, so
he's
oh my gosh.
So he's got one friend there, and Robert Carradine, you know, from Revenge of the Nerds, is the nerdy guy at the school. So he comes to this new school, and what he starts to see is that the school's kind of like some sort of like Lord of the Flies thing is happening, where basically no one's paying attention to the teachers, and there's this like group of cool kids who basically bully the shit out of everyone, and no one does anything about it. And this new guy's like, "Are you guys crazy? Stand up for yourself. This is complete insanity." And so it's like this whole it's very political in a way. It's looking at the fabric of cliques and power structures. And so he starts pushing back, and then his friend comes to him and says, "Hey, we've been friends for years. You shouldn't keep pushing because bad things they'll do bad things to you." And he's like, "Screw that. You should help me and we should fight back." And he doesn't help his friend, and something bad happens to the new kid, and he gets kind of fucked up. And then the second half of the film basically becomes a slasher movie where he has come back and bad things are happening to all these bullies, and it's slowly empowering the people of the school to kind of take back the school. But it's done dead serious. It's not like funny. Mm-hmm. It's not goofy. It's a really interesting movie that for years, when it's not like other slasher movies from this period, the title makes it sound like that. It is something else, and that's what makes it so interesting. And this one is streaming on Amazon now. So, and this was like unheard of. You know, the fact that this would be streaming is just insane to people who had been looking for this movie, because it was one of those kind of treasure titles. I think you'd find it real interesting.
I just wrote it down. Yeah. So yeah, I've got to hunt this one down. Where is it streaming?
That one's
again?
On Amazon.
Amazon. Yeah. Okay. Okay. My number two spot. This one was one that I had seen back, gosh, it was probably like early in my college career, like sophomore or junior year of college, and was just completely blown away by it. And this is Thesis,
oh, yeah,
which is streaming over on Apple TV. You were talking at the top of the show about some of the streaming platforms that we forget we belong to. I always forget I belong to Apple TV, and I totally pay for that every month.
You will love this. The only reason... at some point, I think one of the only movies I've ever looked on by Apple TV is this one, because it's the only place it's streaming.
It is.
I looked for it for a long time. I haven't even pushed play. I've seen it before, but I wanted to see it look good. And it is one of the only places that movie exists online.
Well, I'm going to be talking about it on Deep Cuts in a couple of weeks, because I thought about it a couple of weeks ago for some reason. And then suddenly I was like, where is it streaming? And it's only on Apple TV. And I was like, wait, do I have that? Oh, God. Yeah, I've had this for years. I've never stopped paying for it. So go Apple TV. You took my money. But hey, now I can watch Thesis there and plan to cover it on a Deep Cuts. But for now, I'll just give you kind of the bare bones plot. This is from 1996, Spanish horror film. It is about a college student, two college students in Madrid, who decide to do their thesis. One in particular, we're kind of focused on the girl of it, who decides to do her thesis on why people like watching violence, why people enjoy seeing horror films, why they like watching glorified violence. And while she is doing this research project, she happens upon a VHS tape of a girl being tortured and eventually killed. And she realizes that what she's watching is a real life snuff tape. Not only that, she recognizes the girl in the video who is killed and tortured as a girl who went to the school. And she realizes that somebody at the school did this, made this tape. And then it just kind of the onion unfolds from there. This is a really tight little film. This is a tight little tense thriller currently on Apple TV, and it is the only damn place you can see this. It gets really perverse and kind of wild at points. So Thesis, 1996, this is a good one.
Yeah, and I would have seen this VHS quality, I'm sure, the first time.
Same.
Yeah, 96.
Yeah.
He went on to make The Others, and I love Open Your Eyes, the original Spanish.
Open Your Eyes,
that movie rules. Okay, my number two, I said I would be mentioning this master of horror again, Kiyoshi Kurosawa. This is one of his lesser known ones that I watched right before filming, and I thought it was really creepy. It's called Retribution. It has the same, you know, uses the same, the best Japanese actor on the planet right now, Koji Yakusho. He's in every Cure. He's the main guy in all of his films. And this one, he is a police detective. He's investigating this murder. It's just kind of noir-y of this woman in a scarlet dress has been murdered. I think her face down in a puddle of water, you know, when they find her. And he starts putting together these pieces, and it starts relating it to other, like, looks like there's work of a serial killer and all these murders and all these very specific details. Like there, she's found with one button, a very specific button for a specific kind of jacket in her hand in this puddle. And he's like, there's something about it that he's like, okay, I got to look into this. And then you look down on his jacket and he's missing that button. And basically as it goes, he starts to go, the the most likely suspect is me. And he has no idea how that's possible. And it starts, all these clues start all pointing towards him the deeper he investigates this, but he has no conscious, you know, there's no conscious side to him that believes he's the killer. Fascinating movie, super creepy. He starts seeing the ghost of the red dress comes, like she starts coming and kind of haunting him. And it's like actually creepy. And it's like, I think it's better than a lot of the J-Horror, to be honest. I think it's better than a lot of the ones that maybe did better, Grudge and stuff. I just think it's a tighter, more interesting mystery horror. So this is a really fun one on Amazon. Not available many places, actually. This is not a very easy one to track down outside of an Amazon rental. So yeah, definitely like this one. Retribution,
and that one's on Prime.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
I think you have to rent it though. Like, so there's different for people who have a Prime account, sometimes your things are free. I think it's still a rental fee on Amazon. Yeah.
Boo. Okay, yeah, fine.
Sorry.
There's still like $2.99 fine.
It's worth it.
Well, I'm going to end with one that is currently on Amazon Prime. And this is a movie that I definitely kind of proselytized back when it first came out, and it did not get very good reviews. And I was the one going like, I swear it's good. And since then, as I'm looking at the reviews on IMDb and some of the ones on Letterboxd, it looks like people have come around to it. As I'm staring at one that says absolutely incredible movie on par with Saw and Hostel. So now I'm going to promote it again. Back in 2000 teens, like 2010 or 11, when I was working at Fangoria, we were putting out slates of movies, and we were putting them out through distribution companies. I think this one went through Brain Media. We did one through Blockbuster back then. And so we were picking up like 8 to 12 films a year and putting them out direct to DVD. And one of the very first ones that we did was this movie called Inhuman Resources, which is about six people who are kidnapped and being held in an office. And they are being held by this guy named Red, who has been arrested and was sent away to a criminal insane asylum because people believed that he was a serial killer. And what you find out is that each of these six people that he has arrested were in some way responsible for putting him in this insane asylum. Like, they gave testimony to the police about this crime that they saw that they swore he did, that in some way they damned him. And he knows he is innocent, and so he has kidnapped all of them and is holding them hostage and torturing them until they go through every scrap of evidence that was put forth in the court case and find the flaw. And it posits itself as a torture film, but what they're forced to do is they're forced to sit there for days on end and type up the court transcripts. And they start to see inconsistencies, and they start to actually find stuff, and they start to realize that the people in the room might not be completely innocent and might have been framing this guy. And it's really good. It's really contained. It's like six people, one room. The guy who plays Red, the guy who's the psychopath holding everybody hostage, who was falsely accused, we think, you know, it's Nicholas Pope. Bad Boy Bubby.
Oh yeah.
I remember at the time you were like super excited.
It's in my master list of like extras to mention because it's not horror, but it's it is on Tubi, and it never used to be easy to see. So I did want to mention
Bad Boy Bubby is also on Tubi.
Yeah, I was very excited.
Watch this one first so it doesn't taint your viewing, and then go over to Bad Boy Bubby.
Pretty extreme.
But yeah, Nicholas Hoult plays the main guy in this. So this came out in 2012 when Fangoria put it out, and it got decent reviews, but it was a lot of like, you know, oh, it's direct to DVD. We put like these weird art covers on the front that definitely did not do the movie any justice, of like a desk with legs sticking out. Like, it said nothing about the movie. And it is a really tightly woven kind of torture film, murder mystery, you know, 12 people in a room, who are, in this case, six, who have to figure out why they're there slowly. And I've always found it to be a really intricately woven plot. So it is currently streaming on Tubi. So Inhuman Resources from 2012. This was definitely my fave of that slate of films that Fangoria put out then.
Eighth Wonder of the World, mom. That's like,
oh God.
Once you hear that, you will not forget what he's talking about. Because I sure haven't. Okay, my number one is purely to annoy and badger you and anyone like you who has yet to see, but the best thing that people need to see streaming, Door.
Door. I have not seen Door.
I'm telling you, that's why I'm putting it in my number one, so you know I'm serious.
Door 3.
Watch Door 3, and I respect that because that movie's cool too. But Door on Screambox, and they have the nice, pristine, like re-release version of this from 88. This is Japanese. It is about a housewife and her son, because the dad's always working, in a high-rise apartment. Somebody is giving her spam calls constantly. It's just her day-to-day life. It's very mundane for most of it. Spam, and then one day he tries to get in, like to the little part where you've got the, you know, the door slightly open with mm-hmm. the chain, and he kind of puts his fingers in to give her a pamphlet, and she like slams it closed on his doors and hurts his fingers. And then the second half, he is intent on getting in there, and it is super intense and has a utterly just like one of those set pieces that goes on for like about a 15-minute sequence that I don't even want to ruin by saying what it looks like, but it is a, for directors especially, showstopper, where you're like, how are they pulling this incredible orchestration off? It is so good, and I know you will love it. So I can't, that's okay. I put it number one, because when I see you next, I know you will have seen Door on
okay.
Screenbox.
Let's round it out with the three best things you have seen so far in 2024 quickfire.
Okay, you start. I have to look up my letterbox. That's how I do these things. I didn't make notes on this. I just have my list.
My three faves so mm-hmm. far, Immaculate.
Yes.
Stop Motion.
Yep, that's pretty close up there too.
And if you don't watch the first episode, I swear to God, I don't even know why I'm here. Has Been Hotel, by far uh-huh. one of the best things I have seen this year. It's 20 minutes long. Just watch the first fucking episode, Kane, on Amazon Prime.
But that's not a movie, so you have to also pick a third movie.
Fine. The Coffee Table.
Okay, I like that. I won't include Chime because I saw it for this week's show, but I think that's at the top of my list right now. I got to be, honestly, pretty much we're in line. I think Stop Motion's way up there. I think Immaculate, I can't really separate Immaculate and First Omen, though. I think First
Omen, they're both great.
I think First Omen is lately edging it because I want to watch that one again because the imagery is so good, but I do think Immaculate was the better movie. So it's somewhere in that three. And then it kind of goes to things like Abigail and Infested and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, lots of good stuff. I mean, you really like things like of the smaller movies, I think we'd both say Monolith is really solid.
Monolith was great.
Yeah, there's still a lot of, I mean, I'll be honest, I believe I have a list of right now, just before we go, I think there's about 30 horror films on the, I keep this on Letterboxd, so if somebody wants to see every new horror film I've listed in order, I would be surprised if like two or three of them are in the top 10 of the end, because I think we're about to hit, like when things like Long Legs, I think there is amazing movies to come. Not that there haven't been some really good, this has been a really good year so far, but I mm-hmm. think some real gold stuff is coming in the second half of the year, and I cannot wait to watch some of it, and probably a lot of it with you.
Yeah, I will see you back at the theater when we get back in person end of June. And Faith Book of the Year so far this year, definitely The Hunter's Daughter. I'm totally digging that. So we are going to be dark on this show for a couple of weeks while we take our summer vacation, but our Patreon show Deep Cuts will keep on cruising. So if you want some of the wild deep cuts that you heard us talk about today in a lot more detail, along with some just really weird bonkers stuff, head on over to our Deep Cuts show Patreon, or our Patreon show Deep Cuts, where we will keep the party going even while we're on vacation from this show.
And there must be, if you were to join today and you didn't really understand what it is, there must be like 50 or plus episodes, like 1 hour episodes of there. So there, it's like a whole discovering a whole nother show, probably, if you hadn't been on
it. Is a whole nother show. I mean, it's where we are every other week. We're still podcasting every week, just half the
time. But it's a specific kind of thing. It's really about finding movies we haven't seen before, or films that we have to rewatch that are off the beaten track. So
off, weird, or hard to find. It's a lot of kind of like, I had to dig for this. Yeah, it's definitely our favorite type of stuff, is the weirdest stuff I can't find on that isn't streaming places, that I have to really dig for, that I will only find on a Blu-ray that was released in Sweden in, you know, 1992, that I have to hunt for. Those are the ones I get excited about a lot. So yeah, so that's over on our Patreon show Deep Cuts. And otherwise, we will be back early in July with a new show here. So in the meantime, we hope this streaming list keeps you going through the summer.
And to our Canadian friends, the two of us will absolutely be at Fantasia late July. We still don't know when, because a film we are a big part of called The Dead Thing is going to be premiering there. And so we will definitely be there. So hopefully some people
can come. I love you call yourself a big part of it. Elric directed it. I just like did paperwork, but Elric directed it.
I'm still working on it 2 years later. But yeah, no, we're really excited to be part of that festival. I've never been, and you love it. But also, I've never been to Canada. I've been to many, many places in the world. But
you've never been to Canada?
I've been to so many countries in the world, and I've never been to Canada. So this is going to be very exciting.
Well, I'm excited I get to go to Canada with you for the first time.
And I'm going to go to all the locations of Rabbit. That's my number one goal.
Here's the one. I'm going to take you to the best Italian place French Canada has to offer.
Boom. Sold.
An Italian restaurant there I love. Sold. So, yeah, let's do it.
So, but yeah, but it would be fun to meet some of our listeners if there's some people up there. So until then.
Have a fantastic summer, y'all. We'll be back in a bit. The Colors of the Dark podcast is a Fangoria production. Producers and co-hosts are Rebecca McKendry and Elric Kane. Executive producers are Tara Ainsley and Abby Gould. Sonic branding by Michael Rodriguez. And, of course, our amazing sound engineer, Ernie Hurtado.